reason, I immediately assumed that the sex tape would be with CCP Manifest.
Welcome to Decorations of War. I am your host, Alexei Card, not joined today by my co-host, Celine, who is vacationing in Paris. Filling in is NAR Academy top prospect, Ed Silver.
Hi.
And my guest, former NAR director, Nydia Masters, currently with Horde.
After 100 episodes, I return.
What could go wrong? Former CSM candidate and noted blogger, Apothny of Pandemic Legion.
Hey, guys.
All right, first some shout-outs. I want to give a shout-out to Vit, Hyder, and Lady Scarlet from my new alliance, NC Dot. Vit and Hyder have been absolutely invaluable, helping me get adjusted to my new corp, and Lady Scarlet was the person who helped fix all my IT problems. Because apparently I made new APIs after I left NAR so I could get like NCDOT authorizations and stuff, and Eve still thought I was in NAR. The game couldn't believe that I quit, so that I had to delete and remake them a couple times. But eventually it worked, and I'm good to go. I had my first couple fleets, and I'll tell you guys all about it later on in the show.
My shout-out goes to Noir Academy, the most complete PvP training in EVE, because they took me in and teach me a lot.
Apathy?
My shout-outs are for Lucas Kwan, who did an awesome class with me yesterday for EVE Uni, Crass Kitty, whose stream I've really been enjoying watching, and to the PLAT crew, who I'm about to enjoy the next 3 months of us shouting at each other and generally wanting to kill ourselves and each other simultaneously at all times.
Nids?
Shoutouts go to all my Newbean Initiative bros for helping out Pandemic Horde and all the new people there. Also to Jeff Rader and the rest of the OG crew, just for having fun. And Travis Kikera and his crow.
More on Travis later in the show. You guys are not going to want to miss this ending. I also, of course, want to give a big, 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 big thank you to our sponsor, EveBet. Eve-bet.com, New Eden's premier betting service, where you can bet on Eve stuff and real-life sports with your ISK. They've handled hundreds of trillions in bets since opening. They're a service that you can trust, and they're always adding new stuff for you to bet on. And if you want to play something a little more casual, they also have blackjack, slots, and other stuff. They're always adding new stuff every week. Like I said, esports, real sports, EVE stuff, the Alliance Tournament you'll definitely be able to bet on. Go check them out, eve-bet.com. All right, let's get into it. Apathy, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Tell my audience a little bit about yourself. How did you first get into EVE?
So I started EVE in like 2010 as I think everybody knows how when you have a group of people you play a game with, you play side games. So originally my main game was StarCraft 2, and I started playing EVE with just a couple of guys that I played StarCraft 2 with. I tried mining for 2 months and then quit, as everybody does. 2 years later, I rejoined, decided, hey, I'll give this a go, joined EVE Uni. Really got into FCing, joined Waffles, did a bunch more FCing. And got into tournament stuff, and now I am in Sniggardly in PL, and I do some skirmish FCing, some AT stuff, and I'm a giant media whore.
Speaking of your media whore status, how did you first get into that?
So back when I played StarCraft, I did a lot of casting for StarCraft 2. And then in Waffles, I also had the opportunity to do the Alliance panel. I was actually worried I killed it because they didn't do it again in 2015, and I was the last person to speak 2014. But then when they were looking for commentators for the Alliance Tournament 12, I thought, hey, casting something I really enjoyed doing. I've done like improv and drama performance stuff since I was really little. So I sent an application in to the AT crew after like getting super excited after seeing the ad for like 5 minutes. Realized, okay, this is dumb. You don't really know anything about the AT. So never mind. But then I actually got to the interview stage and then I actually got in. And it's been a really awesome ride being Alliance Tournament caster. So I got to do the year after. I've been involved in the EVE-NT stuff, both the online shows and the live events. I got to do the EMR championships recently on stage in front of, you know, a couple hundred nerds into the live stream. So it's just been kind of taken off from probably my first Alliance tournament casting run.
That's pretty awesome.
Oh, and I write stuff as well for CZ. I've got to plug them or Xander will be mad.
Yeah, casting the Alliance tournament, something I've always wanted to do. What was it like, you know, the whole environment, the whole atmosphere, actually being in the booth?
I mean, it's really fantastic in working with the crew there, both the players and the other CCPers. It's kind of a small team, maybe like 10 to 15 guys that you interact with really hardcore for 2 weeks. And it's just a bunch of people who have a massive passion about this thing that you also have a massive passion for. So it's one of the most fun things I've ever done.
Awesome. Yeah, I hope to do that someday. That could be fun. Let's talk the upcoming Alliance tournament. Obviously, you know, your Alliance is going to be in it, but besides you guys, any favorites that you're keeping an eye on?
We've absorbed some of the few remaining ex-Hydra dudes, so I think PL's definitely going to be possibly harder to beat than ever. Tuskers look really strong. They've got really excellent piloting from a few core guys, but kind of the auxiliary guys, when they go out to the full 12-man from 5-man from EVNT, sometimes lets them down, and their theory crafting tends to be a bit behind. Hard Knocks, Citizens were supposed to be really good last year, and they do have a lot of talent. It might have just been a bad luck last year. WeForm Volta is going to be a really strong team this year. They've absorbed the old Verge of Collapse team with a bunch of other talent in. And that's everyone that comes to mind at the moment. I'd like to see Exodus do better again, because, like, for a while they were like a really amazing top team, and they're still a very good team, but it feels like everybody got better over the past couple of years, much more significantly than in years previously, and Exodus hasn't been improving the Alliance tournament at the rate of everyone else. Like, they're still an amazing team, don't get me wrong. I just kind of hope to see them kind of regain a bit of their star power that they used to have.
Yeah, a lot of the teams have put more into the theory crafting and practice side of things. I also think it's helped that some of the talent from earlier teams has kind of dispersed a little bit. So it feels like there's just more institutional knowledge among more teams on how to do well in the tournament. That's made things a little bit tighter.
A lot of knowing which teams are going to be good is less knowing which teams did well last year, but which pilots have moved where. Like, for example, in AT 11, Nully got beaten by Waffles, without killing a single ship, and then they came third the following year because they absorbed Hun Reloaded, who were an amazing tournament team for many years.
Awesome, dude. So what are you up to, like, lately? What's your new thing? You're doing skirmish. What does that mean in World War B, where goons are camped into Saarinen?
So, in the world of, like, null block alliances, you kind of distribute FCs into several different roles. The two, I suppose, core ones are, like, the block FCs, which are your Mr. Vs, your Laztels, your Shadoos, your Killabees at the moment. Like the guys who do the big fights, the big timers, Ron Mexico as well, for example. Like they're like the guys that like, oh my god, this is the best C ever, and they've got FC ever than the big cult personality stuff. Skirmish FC is more your roaming gangs, tend to be smaller. The best skirmish FC I probably know is Muck Barovian in PL. But it's more smaller gangs of like maybe 10 to 50 dudes, which in NullSec is fairly small gang compared to the big block fleets, and you're kind of roaming, poking hotspots rather than attending specific timers or taking someone's solve or something like that.
So you really don't have a lot to do in World War B over the past week or two, right?
I mean, you just kind of got to know where people are willing to fight you are, and it's things like looking engageable and stuff. Like currently I've been running a fleet comp of Rail Deimos. Like, if you think about the Deimos, like, they're not a shit people are scared of fighting so much, or, like, they're not a shit that's super intimidating. Like, if you roll up in a bunch of Napox and apostles. Like, people aren't just going to, like, randomly form to fight you. Or, like, if you're talking about LoSec, if you turn up in a T3 cruiser fleet, like, you've got a really hardcore form. If you turn up in hulls that are less used, that people aren't as scared of, then they're more likely to fight you. But if you really know what you're doing, if you design the fleet comp well and you know exactly how you want to fight, you can get more fights and they can go really well for you. And that's really been my approach to FCing since the beginning. Like, not flying, you know, the doctrine of the day, like the Ishtar, as it were, or the Cerberus as it is now, but flying less known ships with, in my own style, in my own fitting, in a way that I find interesting. And I just find that it gets you more fights and it gives you more interesting fights. It's a lot more fun, like, for me.
Oh, yeah, I 100% agree. In fact, that's like the only thing I need that gets me out of bed these days. You know what I mean? Trying to design that fleet comp that looks weird, that people will be like, oh, I'll fight that. I can't even figure out what's going on with that, but then you turn around and actually kick the crap out of him.
Yeah, the only other thing I've done is I just bought my Erebus. I only ever got my first Dread like 2 months ago, so I now have an Erebus, and it's really scary. I haven't been brave enough to poke it out the pulse shield yet, but I basically sold off everything else I own in order to be able to afford it in the pilot, and it's really pretty, sat in one of the PL apostles, and I log it in occasionally just to look at it.
What Doomsday?
I have all of them in the cargo.
Which one are you most excited about turning on? Let me put it like that.
I've been meaning to log into Sissy to try them, but it's probably the Lance of the Shotgun. Everything in this specific place, screw you. And the Lance one, because I want to be like Cyclops from X-Men.
Brilliant. All right, Apothne will be hanging on to talk about our top stories, which, you know, he's actually involved with quite a few. But we want to transition to having Nydia come on the mic. Nydia is, like you said, he was on the show maybe 100 episodes ago or something like that. It's been a long, long, long time. Welcome back, Nids. It's good to have you back on the show.
Finally, the show's good again.
Right?
I might listen to it this week.
For those of you that don't remember that far back, Nydia was actually basically my second in command at NAR for quite a long time. Director, FC. Oh, sorry, yeah.
I was saying a good 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. It's like Tarim, you, and then Del, right? Pretty much.
That was the good one. Don't lie about it.
Also, fun fact, he tried to do a hostile takeover of the Corp prior to leaving. So he's one of two people to do that. So with the whole me finally retiring as CEO and giving the reins over to someone else thing, I thought it might be, you know, kind of historically appropriate to have him comment on the whole thing. And he has words to say, so... At the risk of being removed from crossing zebras for what I'm sure will be some very interesting comments, Nydia, the floor is yours.
So where do you want me to start?
Well, first tell the audience the story of trying to take over NAR the first time around.
All right. I tell this story to people I know every few weeks, to tell you the truth.
That's a good story.
I'm in Pandemic Horde now, and they love hearing the old war stories. Like, you have no idea. I've never found a more interested audience. And you know me, I love to tell the old war stories. So I tell this story every few days to few weeks, and I'm going to keep it relatively short. But to make a long story short is I was Alex XO for, must have been at least 2 years since Tarim left before me. And to make a long story short there is that... eventually, I was no longer happy with the management style, and I decided I was going to leave. Alec didn't really want me leaving, and we got into a bit of an argument on Ventrilo at the time, and we said some nasty things to each other, which, I mean, I regret, because I liked Alec. I had no problem with Alec as a person, I just didn't like how he was running the corp. And in a half-ass statement, I half said, why don't you just give me the CEO then? And that is essentially the extent of my hostile takeover.
No. Yeah. Is that really the story you
that's
tell?
That's pretty much it. That's what I genuinely believe, and that's how I genuinely feel.
Well, you left out all the good parts about how you got the other directors to, like, do an emergency meeting on TeamSpeak.
I got one other director.
And no, it was all of them.
I mean, like, we were all there at the time. Yeah, we were talking about what things were going on and how what direction the corp was going in.
I remember it was McCreary, Kat, the fuck else? It was like two other people. And we had like this emergency thing where like they were going to vote for either me or you to lead the corp.
I mean,
and we were like
making
pitches to them of like what we were going to do if we still stayed on, that kind of thing.
I think we were there vaguely, but definitely by then I had made the decision that I wanted to go do something else for a while. I was burned out from things in general, and to an extent I'm still burnt out.
I mean, Hostile Takeover, like, I knew what you were capable of, because you and I had been friends for a really long time, and we're still friends to this day. We were friends, like, the day after you left. We were still talking on Skype. But I remember, like, thinking to myself, like, man, you could be doing a lot better than this. Like, you were clearly just like, well, I'm going to leave, so I might as well try this thing, but,
I think, like, any work relationship, at one point, we decided that it wasn't going to work out with us together anymore, but, like, we still needed to go to those lunches.
So, yeah, Nitty and I still talk on Skype almost every day, it feels like, about one thing or another.
Too many days.
Yeah, too many days. So now NAR finally has a new CEO. What are your thoughts?
I'm gonna be as honest as possible without swearing so much because, you know, crossing zebras. Noir could do a lot better.
Wow. Ouch. I don't know. I mean, besides you, though.
Besides me?
Yeah.
I hadn't been in Noir for a long time. Over the years, you had asked me more than once, come back. I'm not, you know, even I had said for quite a while, I'm not happy in my corp anymore. It's time for me to go. And you had been like, come back. And my biggest issue was, I don't know anyone in the corp anymore. And that's really scary.
Yeah, it's a very different corp than when you were in, for sure. After you left, there was like a huge push for less of like, you and I were sort of on the same wavelength with, like, chewing people out and pushing for perfection as much as humanly possible. There was a lot less focus on that going forward. And even though I hadn't kicked anybody out, I kicked out maybe, like, one person for a rage boot in, like, two and a half years. Some people were still like, oh my god, I don't want to undock because Alec can kick me out. I was like, how do you even remember that? They have no idea, Nidia, what it was like back in the day when you and I were like the brothers of destruction of fucking running people into the ground for screwing up, kicking people out left and right. Like, boots for screwing up were a week to every other week affair. Like, it was just something that happened. Somebody would fuck up and get tossed right out.
I would definitely say along the lines of every other week. I mean,
yeah, I'd say.
I would always, like, there were always people on my list, and I was like, I would put forward and say, this person needs to go, this person needs to go. It was fairly rare for me to say, this person needs to go right now, unless they did something dramatic. Alec had a habit of booting people because he was menstruating that day.
Remember when we had roster reviews literally every month?
I loved those roster reviews.
Yeah, they were great.
It was the time I was looking forward to the most in EVE. I would no joke, write it on my calendar on my wall.
Well, by the time I was leaving, like, roster reviews were a 3 to 6 month affair. It just didn't happen that often, but somehow I'm still a bad guy. These guys, they just don't know. I mellowed out way softer than when Noir first started out. And I think, like, the big cultural change as far as the corp happened when you left. Because part of the pitch for that was like, okay, We're going to take Noir Academy, we're going to make Noir Academy full-time, we're going to invest a lot of resources in it, and we're also going to try to make the corp culture, like, more newbie-friendly, a little less aggressive on the performance side of things, try to build more of a family-type feel. And we came a long way on that one, but was never really able to shake off the perception that I was a bad guy. But, yeah, it's definitely a different place now, definitely way more newbie-friendly, way less yelly, way less, elite gamer type shit. It's very much a friendly atmosphere where we develop people. And I kind of liked it better that way in a lot of ways. But yeah, Dell's definitely, I think, the right guy to lead the new Noir, where he just has a good vision of how to take the corp going forward, because we have to go even more in that direction to, like, be relevant in EVE anymore, because, like, Apatha and I were talking about before the show, small gang stuff is kind of on the outs for EVE.
On the outs? What do you mean?
Was it talking with you, or was it talking with, it might have been somebody on TeamSpeak yesterday, but there's just this feeling that, you can't really take a 25, 50 man corp out into the game and have a huge impact like you used to be able to do. The game's grown, the meta's changed.
Like, I think we're in kind of a renaissance of, like, micro gang and small gang, where, like, you can have really cool fights at the moment, but,
But I mean, like, actually, like, do stuff. Like, back in the day, Noir, a 50-man corp, could go out and literally kill a 500-man alliance, like, to death. I don't think that's possible anymore. It's just too much money,
Exodus,
too many people.
Did reinforce VFK with 7 dudes, like, 2 or 3 months ago. That was pretty funny.
Yeah, the soft thing is interesting, because you can do that with a really super small group of folks, thanks to the Entosis links.
I think a lot of the problem is the nature of the game has changed, in that EVE always had a sense of bigger, 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 bigger. And as people play the game more, the doctrines change to getting bigger ships, better ships, bigger gangs. And one thing that was our primary disagreement when we were in Noir, Alec, was you always want to be number one. I always wanted to be number two. I always was happy with, I want to be the number two, maybe even number three mercenary corp in EVE. And at the time, I think we solidly had it. But you always want to go bigger and better, and that's where we disagreed quite a bit. Mm. But these days, even at Noir at its peak, maybe when we had like 115 members and 80 of those were active in any 1 week, guaranteed, I don't think that could compete anymore in certain areas. I think they could still compete in certain areas, definitely Highsec, definitely in certain regions in the south. But in the north now, where all the World War B is right now, that's not realistic. No one these days would hire a corporation to Noir size, even at its peak, even at its best of its best and most elite. I don't think anyone would hire them to fight this war anymore.
Yeah, like, I don't think we would get a contract like we got for, say, the Providence invasion with AAA. Like, we had maybe 150 total folks, of which maybe 75% of that was active. And we got a huge high-profile contract from a 0-0 block to, like, go in and actually basically fight half the region while they ground out the other half. And then we got space later as a reward for that. And we got money up front, and then they were like, hey, you guys did pretty good. Let's do the space thing. I don't see that happening anytime soon. Not for an alliance that size, anyway.
Not for what we were doing and what we stood for. At the end of the day, no matter what, Noir was a mercenary corporation first and foremost. So to sort of, again, I don't think that we would ever be able to do what we were trying to do. Even if we had every card pulled up right on the table, if you and I went in and said, we're going to make the corp good again and everything worked out right, I don't think we could do it again like we did.
maybe not like we did, but I stand by that, like, the corp could have been rebuilt. We had a lot of great talent in our academy, especially, shout-outs to Ed, that wanted to stick with Noir brand and rebuild. But the amount of work, the whole rebuilding phase, I was willing to do it, but it really would have sucked. And I'm super glad I didn't have to do it in hindsight. But I was definitely willing to. I think there was a path forward. I think some of the structures coming up are going to be super interesting, possibly from a small gang point of view, like surveillance arrays and things like that. And definitely the SOV system makes it possible to get a lot done with a small group. The thing is, like, are people willing to pay for that, for what you're able to bring to the table in that way? And at least the mercenary market for the past couple years has been, actually not really. There was like a burst of activity after the FuzzySoft patch. And then there's kind of a lull in 00 SOV stuff. And I think with the change to nodes now so that they auto-regen, I think that makes that prospect a lot less appealing for folks. Definitely still possible, though. And I'm sure those contracts are going to be out there. But we'll have to see. There really isn't an alliance that size anymore. There's Pandemic Legion, super huge. There's White Legion and Mercenary Coalition, which are both mid-sized. And there's no real, like, small group out there doing stuff in 00 right now. But I'd love for Ed to throw in on this, because he hasn't talked in a while, and he is actually in Mercenary Coalition right now doing these contracts, so.
Yeah, what we I talk a little bit about, we are at the moment in Syndicate and fighting in it. It's a lot of fun. Finally, opponent who fights with us and not just ducking up.
But that's in Syndicate. Well, that's not really a SOV thing.
No, it's not a SOV thing. What we've done with SOV thing at the moment, we still have a couple of systems in tribute. Every couple of days, some of the nodes are gonna get reinforced. And so we go up there and take care of it. But the new SOV system, it's for small gang, it's working, and if you're doing it right.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. There's a lot of ways to do it wrong.
You have to be on the ball if you do it right. You to focus on a single constellation and not on an entire region to do it.
Yep. And, you know, they have to a certain extent, make sure the defender's not really there. Yep. Thing is, like, if the defender is not there, then even a small corp of 50 folks could go out there and take systems away. That's the beauty of the SOV system.
It's easy. If the ADM is low, it's easy to take. If the ADM is high, it's more difficult to take, but not impossible.
Yep. I mean, the real thing is if they show up, because even if the ADM is high, if they don't show up to kick you off the nodes, really it's just time.
Yeah.
But yeah, if they come back and you can't fight them off, then you're pretty screwed. And I think back when we were looking at ways to grow Noir, like maybe last year or the year before that, you know, big issues were like, well, shit, we want to do all these things, like, not necessarily SOV stuff, but more, because we knew from the beta test that we could do SOV, like, we could do SOV, no problem. The issue was, like, passes and moons and taking these objectives that would actually enable us to increase our income and get pilots' stuff. And we couldn't really do that without getting numbers from somewhere.
For passes, you need numbers, because for passes, they show up.
Yep. And it's super risky to shoot them, because you need, like, a huge fleet in one spot. It's not like you can take a single curse and go take a whole constellation.
Yeah, the new fighters, they eat battleships alive.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about that. I just want to close out this segment with a bit of an update, because you're the first person in Noir who's been on the show since I left. Give the audience a bit of an update on how the Corp is doing, any new changes, how is Dell adapting to the role, is everything going great, are we recruiting people, like fill everybody in on what's been going on.
So far, it's doing fine. Dell has some ideas. I'm not filled in all of them. We already had a Corp meeting where we talked about how it's going, what we're doing in the future, and what we want to do. Most of the things I don't think I'm allowed to share. But Noir and Noir Academy, we are recruiting. We're looking for new members to grow and to get better. And yeah, we're still a family. We still have our fun. We are still getting all our we're still getting teached a lot. I, for one, have started to lose less ships. It's a good sign.
Nice. That's a very good sign.
Yeah, it is. And now I start to understand when I lose a ship, what happens. It's very good.
And if the leader purges you tomorrow for being on this podcast, I'm a recruiter for Horde. I'll totally bring you in. No worries, mate.
Do not join Horde.
I don't think Dell is purging me for being on the podcast.
I mean, just in case.
No, I'll take care of you. I'll take care of you. Don't go to Nidia. Come toward the light.
I have enough plan B and C's.
All roads lead to the Legion.
Yeah, I figure it seems like everybody who's anybody at some point retires into Pandemic Legion. So I'm sure at some point when I decide that I'm going to quit the game, I'll probably just join it as a lark. Who knows?
I retired into Pandemic Horde. It's like, instead of retiring into Florida, like North Carolina.
Turn me the other way around. Like, culturally, what is Horde like compared to actual Pandemic Legion, since I have you both on?
I hang out a lot with what we call the OG crew, which is mostly a bunch of guys from Legion, from Waffles, from Horde, from any community, frankly, and Eve can join. Anyone can join, and OG stands for other games. So we play games. We play games all day long, mostly. People play Dota, people play League, people play Tabletop Simulator. It's really big right now, I'm not kidding.
Basically whatever Jeff wants to play, everyone
yeah,
plays
basically
that with
whatever
him.
Jeff Rader wants to play at the time, exactly. And but there's a core group of people that are always there, maybe like 30, 40 of us all together. And I mean, at the end of the day, we're friends. So we hang out together, we have fun together, we talk about each other, things like that. And most of these people are Pandemic Legion. A lot of them, to tell you the truth, the bitter vet concept of Pandemic Legion exists. What is Horde like? Horde is literally now, we hit this week 9,000 members. A number that's just mental. We're actually freaking out about the max corp number. Pandemic Horde, coming from the guy that used to run Noir Academy, at any one time in our academy, I think the most we ever had in class, Alec, was 30. We have 9,000. Try to imagine that. It's, it gets a little mental, but we try to maintain a foster of the basic rule of Pandemic Horde is don't be a dick. And I think generally speaking, most people tend to do that. We don't want to have a community that's like Karma Fleet. That's our number one rule. We always say it in private chats. We don't want to be Karma Fleet. The people, generally speaking, are nice to each other. Even if they don't really know, they try to help each other. People give money to each other. People like give fits. They help out each other. They go to each other's sites to help out when they're asked. It's, while we do have problems, I'm not going to lie, when you have 9,000 members, it's really hard to keep track of. Just at the lowest membership base there is, not the management, not anywhere in between. These are the nicest people I've ever seen in EVE.
Wow, that's awesome.
It's horrible. I hate it.
It doesn't seem like a good fit for you, but that's cool.
sadly, a few of the directors from OG that I know in Horde accidentally found out I was moderately competent, and now they have me working.
All right, let's move on to the rest of the show. We've got lots to talk about. We had a poll. Where do you get most of your EVE news? A split 50-40, Reddit to Crossing Zebras. I am surprised that Reddit got such a high vote.
I get my news from Reddit. I mean, Crossing Zebras isn't so much a news site. It's more a magazine style, where people will write about current events, but it's not like, oh my god, this fight happened, we need an article out in the next 2 hours. It's, hey, this fight happened, it would be cool if we had an article out on this in like the next day or two. Guys, write something. Guys, fucking write something for once, damn it.
And Reddit is more the tabloid.
Yeah, Reddit is like a constant stream of consciousness.
Yeah, but that's just it. It's a stream of consciousness. A lot of the stuff there isn't really news. Like, one of the top posts right now is like, somebody took a picture of four Dominic's strong end-to-end. Looks hilarious. Doesn't tell me anything about what's going on in EVE.
I am genuinely surprised Reddit's not higher. I'm not going to lie. Basically, the first website I go to in the morning is the EVE Reddit. But as a bit of a footnote to that, what's not on the poll is the old EVE blog pack, which I still read every single day.
Wow, I didn't even know that was still active.
It's still active. Crossing Zebra is on it. EVE News is on it. I believe EVE News 24. That other website run by a crazy guy from Goonswarm is on it. I would argue most active websites are on it, and you will genuinely find some gems. I don't read every article, but there's some good gems in there that's definitely worth reading.
Very interesting.
I'm gonna have to get you that link, aren't I?
I'm sure I could find it on my own, but yeah, I'm definitely gonna have to check it out. I figured that died a long ass time ago, like so many other various feeds and. I mean, everybody likes tries the podcast feed, a blog feed. Usually, they're active for a year or two, and they kind of go away. So that's cool that the blog pack's still active.
Even Dawn of our Declarations of War is still on it.
Whoop whoop.
Not that I read it or listen to it.
But... I mean, really, why would you?
I mean, I'm sorry. Listen to Declarations of War, the greatest podcast in EVE history.
Not the number one CCP certified podcast, but we can't all have that. Our top stories. The number one is definitely the Battle of Saarinen. This has been, for anyone that thought that World War B was over, like, you have not been to Saarinen. It is a fucking bloodbath. The Battle of Saarinen has taken the course of about a week or so, three or four super large engagements between what is the remains of the Imperium? I almost feel bad still using that name because they've got like half the alliances that they used to. But there's still some alliances in there, and the MBC, or again, what remains of the MBC. And when I say big, I mean like 10% tie-dye, 100 billion ISK being killed, like you name it, huge fuck-off brawls that last for an hour or two apiece. And surprisingly, Goonswarm is not losing all of them. They're actually holding their own in a few engagements. They won one straight up. But when they lose, man, they lose hard.
I was there.
By all means, Nidia, give us your battle report.
So I hooked up with the Horde group, which Titan bridged down to 93 and went into the fight. By then, the fight was already engaged, and the
Goons... Which of the fights is this?
This was the fight in Saarinen on May 17th.
Okay.
It was for the fight that Pandemic Legion and company were trying to stop the Citadel from onlining. Funny story about tie-dye. It onlines anyway. Thanks, CCP. But by then, the fight was already joined and it was going crazy. Not only were we at 10% tie-dye, it was going lower. It only shows down to 10%. It goes down to like 1.
Does it really?
Yeah. It was the worst fight of my life. I literally went and made an espresso while we were warping to the gate. When we finally got there, we landed in the middle of the blob. We were in Caracos, essentially AB Fit RLML Caracos, and we just went to town. Goons were losing the fight miserably. We were going after their hurricanes. They ended up actually warping off most of their fleet. And I don't know what happened, but apparently Pandemic Legion was tackling all their Megathrons, but not their logistics. So when they fleet warped, all their logistics warped out. So in the low tie-dye, we ended up going through the Megathrons like tinfoil, because now the logistics were gone. And once that was done, once we got our bunch of kills, we warped off. And yeah, worst fight it ever been. Local was way past 2,000. I mean, we were talking Jito levels. And the very next day, I opened up my feeds, looked at that other website run by that guy from Goonswarm. And apparently we lost the fight miserably. And I was like, wait, what?
Well, the Citadel online, guys, that's a strategic victory.
The battle reports that I got, we killed quite a few ships. It wasn't even, like, we took quite a bit of losses on the MBC side, but we definitely won the fight, something like 30% to 70% losses.
Yeah, I think they went up losing like 60 billion or something off that one fight.
It was a bit shocking.
But interestingly, that day prior, they had won a fight by a fairly significant margin. Not quite as much to make up for the loss, but you know, they came out ahead in an engagement, which I think is the first major fight that Goons have won, period. War so far.
I think it's important to note regarding the Goons is that over the last 2 weeks to 3 weeks, they've been trying to online Citadels desperately as footholds invade in Pureblind in Saarinen.
So let's talk about that. And I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on this. For me, it seems like a terrible waste of money. I get that they want to have these strategic footholds, but you could do the same thing with a POS for far less. Why are they investing so much money into these expensive citadels just to have them be Titan fodder for NC.dot and PL?
As someone who has access to the Pandemic Horde Fortizar, the guns, they are immensely powerful. Just beyond comprehension. If you set them up correctly for certain types of fleets coming after you, they're just mental. And these allow an amount of safety involved that pauses do not offer currently.
And the Astra houses are relatively cheap. I think we're sitting about 2 to 3 billion.
A bill and a half, just for the base thing. And it also means that unlike POSs, you can actually dock up, which means that you don't have to fit cloaks to your ships, so you don't have the scam resolution penalty.
Goons have been trying to anchor. They tried to anchor one originally. We destroyed it. We being MBC, Horde, etc., etc. And then a few days later, they tried to anchor 7 simultaneously. We killed 6 in a simultaneous op in the space of 15 minutes.
Wasn't it 9?
This has been a recurring issue.
They've also been trying to anchor them in various points of Deep 00, like systems they used to control, not just in the Saarinen area.
Systems we forgot. That aforementioned 7th Citadel that we did not destroy was in a dead-end system that wasn't even a capital jump point.
Which, you know, it seems strange to me. Although, I have not been behind the guns, and I haven't actually fought against one of them yet, so I don't know how crazy powerful they are. I'm going to imagine that most of my audience hasn't been in that situation either, Nidia, so I'd be really interested to hear, like, in a more detail, like, what these things bring to bear in the firepower department and what it's like controlling those guns, because I got to imagine, probably feels pretty awesome.
Imagine a title and a subcapital fleet all rolled into one immovable object.
I like it.
In a sense, yeah, you're not wrong. The Fortizar that Pandemic Horde controls, which coincidentally was the first Fortizar anchored in known space. We call it the Pillow Fortizar. Haha. The primary weapons of any Citadel are missiles, which, generally speaking, we'll have them set up for subcapitals, and they range from large, medium, small ships, things like that. But more importantly is one of the weapons that's involved, and one of the weapons that has now caught the big red boat twice with his sword fleets coming in after us are the point defense systems. Essentially, they're giant smart bombs, and because we have extra equipment which increases the range, these are immensely powerful against small ships.
What kind of range are we talking about?
Frigate in seconds. Over 20 kilometers.
Wow. From the edge of the Fortizar, the physical...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
There are rigs involved that will increase the range. The base range on these things is 2,500 meters. The rigs will increase these over 700%. And they will do 2,000 damage per hit. So, yeah. They're ugly. Now, one of the advantages of these things is, unlike a pause, you can change the fit of these on the fly. You could put newts on them. You could put different kinds of missiles. These things fit fighters, including heavy fighters for the Fortizars and bigger.
So when you say fit on the fly, is it like a ship-fitting thing? You just pop it open, drag and drop, no timers or anything like that?
Exactly.
That's pretty damn good.
Exact same concept, and the fighters are, they work exactly like the new carrier fighters work. If you have the skills, they help out. These things are way more powerful than people realize. Will they fight off an entire fleet on their own? No. But will they complement your fleet? Oh god, yes. They are frightening.
And Ed, you mentioned the fighters. Go into that. Sorry, go.
Yeah, the fighters are bugged at the moment. You need the fighter skills in the Citadel, even if it's said it shouldn't be.
Yes, you do. The fighters, in the case of an Astra House, they use the light fighters and the support fighters like a regular carrier will. A Fortizar and, by extension, the Keepstar can actually use heavy fighters. Both of them, or at least the Fortizar, which is the one I'm most familiar with, can launch 5 fighters squadrons simultaneously. So the amount of DPS theoretically possible to launch out of these things is frightening.
Yeah, these fighters are, they're changing the meta. People are now actually rolling around in just carrier gangs, like 10 carriers, and dunking subcap fleets. NCDOT did it the other day. I have not personally used them, but one thing that I was worried about when the fighter concept for the carriers was happening was that the fighters wouldn't be impactful enough for the difficulty of controlling them. Sounds like that fear totally misplaced. It sounds like they're super OP, as a matter of fact.
As someone that played a lot of World of Warships, including using the carriers, the basic tenets of using them are very similar. Try to imagine a mix of World of Warships with Homeworld, and you basically got how EVE fighters work. Our old friend, Alec Securitas, actually was moving a carrier out and trying to get it killed, and apparently it took him hours to do because he kept killing everyone that came after him.
What are these carriers good at hitting? Is it just battleships, Ed, or is it, you know, stuff smaller? Like, I remember Pandemic Legion was running around on the test server with, this is pre-carrier rework, with carriers that had fighters designed to kill hacks.
If you're wet, they can even hit down to cruisers and frigates, but I think I have not really been caught in the carrier yet, so I can't say for sure.
Nids, any experience using fighters against smaller ships?
Not from carriers, but definitely from the Fortizar itself. I have a little bit of experience, and fighters come in many different varieties now. It's not just the regular fighters and the bombers from the supercarrier age. Yes, the heavy bombers are still there, they also have a long-range fighter, which snipe about 50 kilometers off. Not a whole lot, but they have micro-jump capabilities. The light fighters, in addition to the space superiority fighters, which are anti-fighter fighters, and the support fighters, really change the game. The regular light fighters can do quite a bit of damage to cruisers and even battleships, but the anti-support fighters can control the area, and the support fighters themselves can start putting E-War on the enemy, which really changes how carriers are used quite a bit.
Is it the case of, like, ECM drones versus damage drones, though, where it's like, yeah, you could do E-War, but it's usually better just to have more damage?
I would argue they're far more powerful than ECM drones, and by extension, similar type things are, because you have also each carrier now gets a specific bonus to different ones. The Omar carrier gets a bonus to neutralizer fighters. Chimera gets a bonus to ECM fighters, and so on and so on. So there's quite a bit of differences. You can't launch as many as you would regular attack fighters, but they could certainly complement your load.
So the big question, are we in the age of carriers now? And if so, what's going to be the thing to break them? The new dreadnoughts, perhaps? It would be cool if Eve had a proper tactical wheel, right? Where you had subcaps, get countered by carriers, get countered by dreadnoughts, which are then countered by subcaps.
I think it's far too early to tell. Like, we've only just got to the point where the people with, you know, the really big capital fleets have had the opportunity to make all the mods they need to refit out all their stuff. As far as we can tell currently, in the larger fights at least, dreads are kind of really bad because of their EHP loss. They just are effectively three battleships worth of EHP. And when they're in siege, they can't get remote reps. And you know how fast battleships die in big fights? Imagine three of them with no reps. Like, you just chew through dreads really, really quickly. Faxes are amazing. Their local tank is just insane. It's like an old triage carrier, just like on steroids. Carriers are really cool, but you really got to know how to use them. Like, if you imagine if you drop a bunch of dreads on someone, your dreads are kind of there stuck, you drop carriers like 500k off and send fighters after the dreads, then that's going to blow them up. Supers and titans were really yet to see fielded significantly. Like, I think it's really, really too early to say specifically this counters this and you've got to do this for this and this for that. It's a lot of just kind of early observations that we have at the moment, and we really, I think, need more data before we can say this absolutely is the meta going forward. Like, we've got maybe,
well, sure.
It's probably going to be like 2 or 3 years even before everything settles out properly.
Well, this is an analysis show, so let's have some predictions from our panel of experts here. Nids, why don't you start off? What do you think is going to be the dominant meta and its counter?
I think the meta is definitely growing, and I'm not one to really predict what's going to happen until I see a little more data, but I think these new carriers are going to be extremely powerful going forward. But again, anyone that's played World of Warships or Homeworld or both, with the loss of triage, the carrier's tank is tremendously diminished, so anyone landing directly on top of them, these things just die, even to small gangs, like very small gangs. Like, when we were in Noir, I remember us killing carriers with 6 guys, for example. I think this is an even more likely occurrence. The problem being now is that these carriers can suddenly lock to just ridiculous ranges, and that's where their advantage is.
Well, if they're in warpable distance, one would think you just need to probe them and get on top of them, no? They would
sure.
have to be backed up by faxes.
But there's a new meta sort of occurring that we've... Or rather, an old meta. So, the old Skynet tactic is now back, where people are sitting directly on the citadels, tethered, and are launching fighters 1,000 kilometers or more away. And should they get attacked or anything like that happen, they'll just simply abandon the fighters and tether back to the citadel. Is this a good thing? Eh. But it's occurring more and more. I'm definitely seeing that both from both sides of the war and from third parties.
I would say that's probably definitely not a good thing. I'm sure CCP will patch that.
I would tend to agree.
I'm not convinced yet.
Well, generally, any aggressive action taken from perfect safety is usually frowned upon.
I wouldn't necessarily say it's perfect safety, because you have to anchor a citadel in potentially hostile space. So, like, say you live somewhere, and that's your citadel in your space, then kind of that's a cool defensive advantage, although admittedly kind of the carriers on the gate kind of sucks and seems a bit strong. But say you're just a random group trying to gate camp somewhere, you have to anchor a citadel and put your carriers on it. So, like, you're investing quite a lot of ISK for a fairly immovable gate camp.
Yeah, that's true.
Case in point, you guys are doing it right now on the Saren and Undock.
Yeah, so PL have a Fortizar on the Goon Undock, and it's really, really funny. Like, we just have carriers and Lokis on their Undock all day long. It is hilarious.
Be interesting to see if they make any attempt to push that off. Now, last top story. Now, while we have Apothny here, Apothny, you ran a CSM campaign for CSM 11. And you
did. And before we continue, I'd like to remind everyone listening to this podcast, because I've been inundated with messages by people assuming that I got on. I am not on the CSM. I'm not a member of CSM 11. I did not get on. I pulled out of the race. I'm not on the CSM. I'm sorry to disappoint you, but I'm not a member. I'm sorry.
What is the story behind that?
In March, my health and my real life kind of took a very unexpected turn for not good places. Essentially, it screwed up, at the very least, my plans for the next 4 to 6 months. And if I were to do the CSM, it's something that I wanted to do properly. So I got to the point where it became obvious that adding the CSM onto my list of things that I do with my life, both would mean that I do a really crappy job at being on the CSM, and I'd be doing a really crappier job at what I need to get on with my real life. So I decided that it'd be better to cede the potential spot, if I were to get it, to people with more time who will be able to dedicate it more, rather than just having a semi-active or inactive member of the CSM, which, and you know, we're really at a CSM. CSM 11 really, in my mind, needs to be really, really, really strong. And I didn't believe that I'd be a good candidate anymore. So I thought the only reasonable thing to do at that stage would be to pull out of the running.
Was an unusually responsible decision. Some of the, a lot of the CSM candidates, like, if they have to go inactive or don't think that they'll have the time, they'll just run anyway to get the win.
Yeah. So. For me, like, the running jokes about me being like a media whore and stuff, like it's all good fun, and I am. I kind of like stuff. Personally do stuff in EVE just because I really enjoy working on projects. I really enjoy like performance and sharing my passion. Like, I teach in real life and I do a lot of drama and music, and it's basically just sharing things I'm interested in with people. So when you take that to EVE, that means I FC, I do shows, I cast the Alliance tournament. So like that's what it is for me, and that's why I do all this kind of extra media stuff. So being in the spotlight, while it's fun, like, I wasn't trying to win a popularity contest to boost my internet spaceship ego. That's already inflated as big as it can possibly be, right?
Right, like, so over Cleveland, you yourself, Alec, were CSM for two non-consecutive occasions.
I was. And it was a really awesome experience. I'm glad that I ran. If I had more real-life time, I probably would have run again this time around. But yeah, definitely don't, nowhere close to that. I'm thinking about running again at some point. It may be the campaign that I finally lose, but Need good folks on the CSM, especially now. Shame that you didn't get on Apothe. I think you would have done a terrific job. Very interesting factoid. You appeared on more ballots than anyone else.
Yeah, so if you look at the ballots in terms of what people were on each ballot, I appeared on something like 8,000 different ballots. And then the next most represented person, I want to say was Mr. Hyde with something like 6,000. And then shortly after him, Aerith. I can't remember. The graph is on the internet made by a really cool guy on Reddit whose username I would shout out if I could remember it. That obviously doesn't take into account position on the ballot, 1 through 14. Had I not pulled out, I would have been on the CSM, and so would Erica, the EVE Radio person. But because I dropped off, neither of us got on, and instead Nash Cadaver and Kyle Aparthos got on, who are two really awesome guys. So that's really cool for them.
Comes out in the wash.
Yeah, no, it's really good. I kind of feel bad for Erica. So obviously, had I not pulled out, both of us would have gotten on. But
How would that have worked? That you leaving affected the other candidate?
So if you imagined that the... Is it just a system of three? And you had me at number one, Nash at number two, and Kyle at number three. That was your ballot. And somebody else, and on another ballot, you kind of had Erica down in a number three spot or whatever. So the act of me pulling out means that everybody below me on everyone's ballots effectively go up one. Because otherwise, everybody who voted me inherently lose a nth spot where N is the place I was. So if they filled out a full ballot, that means that me pulling out means they lose their 14th place, but it means that they don't lose out their second person. So if somebody thought that they wanted me number one on the CSM, Bob on number two, and Nash number three, if I pulled out and they didn't run it properly, then Nash and Bob would only still get a second and third vote, and the person voting wouldn't be able to give as much prominence to the person they most wanted on the CSM that was still running. So the act of me pulling out essentially shifted up all the people below me on other people's ballots, and it meant that Erica wasn't below me in placing as much as Kyle and Nash were. So Kyle and Nash got pushed up a bit, and Erica would have potentially gotten pushed up some, but not as much as the other guys.
Interesting.
It's like if you started the voting before I pulled out and everybody voted exactly the same, but without me in it, that is what it would look like.
That's super fascinating.
I have a question.
By all means, Nydia.
Alec, you were on the CSM, as I said, on two non-consecutive occasions over the few years, definitely when I was in Noir. When I was there, the CSM was much smaller. Do you feel that now the CSM has gotten too big, there's too many voices, and that even some of the quote-unquote alternates have a little too much sway in how things move?
I don't know enough about the alternates thing to make any comment, but as far as whether it's too big or not, the reason why it was small when I was on is because, like, of 14 people, we had maybe five solidly active people, with maybe a sixth occasionally. The amount of work that the amount of work that CSM 7 had to do was like crippling for the number of people that were available to do it. So I would much rather have a fully staffed CSM than not. There's no doubt in my mind about that. CSM 4, I feel like, had less work and more hands to do it, and it was much less stressful in a workload kind of way. It was stressful for other reasons.
You managed to work on the CSM, as far as I know, to full extent. Not only that, go to Iceland, leave me, God forbid, in charge of a contract while you were gone, and still tyrannically rule a corporation while doing it. So there must have been some workload and work balance allowed compared to these days?
Well, again, these days I couldn't say, but I mean, back then when I was doing it after CSM 7, I was super burnt out. Like, I was still in charge of Noir, still running Noir, still doing all that stuff.
Was that the first time or second time?
Second time around.
Yeah, but, I remember the second time it was ugly.
I put it required so much, and we got a lot done, especially compared to what we had to work with. But prices were paid, and I did not want to like touch the game for like 2 or 3 months. I was like, guys, I just need some time. And I think I put you guys in charge for the most part. And it's like, I'll pop in once or twice. I'll still check my emails, but I just need a break.
Ladies and gentlemen, you heard it here first. CSM7 killed Noir.
The beginning of the end. But yeah, it's fucking harsh. I mean, I don't know what they're up to nowadays, but I imagine it's not too much different. CSM7 was like, it was practically a full-time job.
Strangely enough, over the years, people have asked me to run for it and/or the Alliance tournament panel. But at the end of the day, I just swear too much and I've always refused. I think once this game...
Do you mean the Alliance panel or casting the Alliance tournament? Because there isn't an Alliance tournament panel, to my knowledge.
Well, I mean, like, the guys in Iceland who pretend to know how the game actually works, but are actually stupid.
That's
no,
both
no
the Alliance panel and the Alliance tournament casters.
No one in particular.
Not you, Apothy. You were actually good. That ought to save it, right?
Oh my god.
It's cool. Everybody knows I didn't really know what I was talking about, but I just looked happy whilst talking about it, so I got away with it.
Oh Christ, it'll be another 100 episodes before I'm on this fucking podcast again.
Actually, I think this one's going better.
I'm less drunk.
So, Apothy, not being on it, I'm sure, a bit of a disappointment, but can you give your reaction to how the ballot actually turned out and, you know, maybe some predictions about what you see as big challenges for CSM 11 or, you know, things you're potentially concerned about the way things might go?
It's really interesting that the voting was done when there were far more people following the Imperium ballot. For example, a lot of the alliances were in the Imperium and thus kind of followed what Mittens... They had the absolute freedom to choose what Mittens told them to do, is I think the way he puts it. So, you know, if you look at the... for example, the graphs we were referencing earlier, everyone on the Imperium ballot appeared like 4,000 times more on average than everyone else, with few exceptions like Mr. Hyde, who's just very broadly popular. Like, there's a big, it looks a lot like a step function if you're a maths nerd, when you look at kind of the ballot falling down. So I'd really be interested to kind of speculate on what the voting would look like and what the CSM would look like without that ballot. I think the other interesting thing is how it's a lot of Imperium and a lot of Pandemic Legion. I think with PL, it's a bit different because PL is a lot smaller than the Imperium. Look, talking like 2.5k versus 40k or whatever. And PL don't do a ballot. Our message of the day in our -10, which is our main talking point, is vote with your heart, but totally vote, set by Elise Randolph, who is himself an ex-CSM member. And I think that one of the things that annoys people about PL, or people don't understand about PL, is that PL tends to attract and actively recruits people who are just active and useful in some way, regardless of what that specific thing is. So if you look at the PL candidates, you've got Mr. Hyde, who joined PL actually only just before getting on the CSM. Before that, he was in Black Legion. He's lots of battleship stuff, solo PvP. You got Nash Cadaver, who's from a completely different sphere, which is EVE tournaments and community stuff. Again, a very recent addition to PL. You've got Bobmon, who, big media empire guy. I'm not entirely sure what he does in game, but that's just because I haven't happened to fly with him. I'm sure he does something. Like he runs EVE News 24. You've got a Noob Man, who is kind of also an important guy at Hard Knocks and Wormhole Space. Am I forgetting any of the other PL candidates?
We
have like 5 or 6 or something.
I believe there were 6.
Bobmon, Mr. Hyde, Noob Man, Nash. Oh, Gorski Carr, of course.
Yes.
My friend
yes.
Gorski, who's like a small gang PvP, good. He has good handle on faction warfare mechanics, like micro gang stuff. Anyway, my point is that it's people from very, very different areas from the game, even if they have the same alliance sticker. Obviously, it would be cool if you had a more broad variety of alliance stickered people, but all of these people hang out with people from other alliances. And PL is a lot more disparate a group than a lot of people think. So, you know, when you look at six PL candidates, you might say, oh, great, we've got six voices saying exactly the same thing, and they're all lobbying for PL interests. Like, it's a good probability that those six PL candidates have rarely, if ever, spoken to each other at all and don't really interact or do similar things at all in game, which kind of plays to PL's strengths a lot of the time, because whenever PL tries to do something, odds are we have a bunch of dudes in the alliance that are really good at that thing, and they do that thing in their spare time anyway, so we can pull from their resources. This has just turned into a massive PL propaganda piece. I'm so sorry.
As someone that was fairly recently the odd man looking in and is now actually part of the Pandemic family, I can attest to you the fact that you put three Pandemic Legion members in the same room and you ask them what color the sky is, you'll get three different answers, and then they will start punching each other in the face.
Well, like, you got the OG Vision. I was going to mention this when we had the Horde versus PL thing. Like, there are a bunch of guys in PL, and we are well known for having some very angry, shouty nerds who are very, very clever and know their stuff, but will disagree with each other till the end of the earth. But you also have people who are just quietly brilliant and useful and make everything go really well. Like, people like Lucas Kwan, who yesterday I took to EVUNI because he's just amazing at being a internet spaceship priest healer in T2 Subcapital Logistics. You have Leonard Kalkin, who is like one of the biggest unsung heroes of the game in my mind. Like, he will just turn up to your fleet or whatever you're doing in PL, remind you of everything you've forgotten to do, and everything will go 1,000 times more smoothly by him being there. Like, I've never heard him raise his voice or be angry. He just turns up, everything goes really well, and then he leaves again, and it's wonderful.
Huh, dude, that sounds like quite a lad.
In a sense, we have the same kind of people in Pandemic Horde. We have people that operate the Newbean Initiative, which is sort of the middle management, which tries to help new people. There are people that essentially don't play EVE anymore, that do so much behind the scenes, but these are people that are complete unsung heroes.
Yeah, I mean, one of the advantages that Horde has is that it's a brand new player organization, and, you know, the people that Horde guys see are the people who are really enthusiastic, really want to do stuff. Like, a bunch of PL guys who are kind of giving up on the game kind of started helping Horde, and it kind of gave them a renewed interest in the game, because listening to several hundred people talk to you about old war stories gives you a great ego boost. But also it's just like a really fun thing to do, to help people and teach people. You kind of don't have the issue of having leadership that's also brand new to the game and still trying to learn everything. Like, you kind of got the guiding hand of Pandemic Legion and really experienced people like Gobbins, who have kind of been in the game for a while. They know what's going on. They know what kind of like the big mistakes for an organization are. And kind of it's like, PL doesn't tell Horde what to do or make them do anything or like say, you must do this, you can't do that. It's just kind of like, just keeps an eye on it, make sure everything's okay. And as long as everything's okay, they kind of, Horde will do their own thing and everything's all good.
Strangely enough, I'm having not the most fun I've ever had in game, but the most fun I've had in quite a few years.
I mean, and that's just by running a bunch of news. Like, if any of the people listening have been in kind of an excitable new player corporation, like, that's like, you've had an experience of what Horde is like. Like, I don't think it's too far to say that Horde is probably very similar to Karma Fleet or original Brave Newbies when they were big in many ways. It's a bunch of new players to the game who are really excited, like, oh my god, there's a Titan! Oh my god, what's this? Ooh, can I get in this caracal? Like, they're all new to the game and they want to learn. It's really excitable. And then it's just kind of like the culture and the people behind the scenes that really give it its own distinct flavor and how it runs and its culture. And we speak about, again, about kind of the PL shouting at people. Grath Telkin, my wonderful CEO, made it very clear that if anybody took the more shouty, nasty, wordy culture from PL to Horde, they would receive his foot several inches up their ass. So everybody is on their best behavior from PL when they hop onto Horde comms.
Grath Telkin, who
that sounds awesome.
Grath Telkin, who is sort of known for publicly being a a bit of a prick. I'm sorry, Grath, but I love you. Has really taken his own initiative on finding members that are sort of in trouble who may leave the game and have turned them around and made them some of the best pilots I've ever seen.
It really annoys him, and he doesn't want anyone to find this out, but Grath is actually secretly a wonderful, kind, gentle man. Like, if you annoy him, like, he has no time to spare people who make his life more difficult, but he is genuinely one of my favorite people in the game.
He tells me to kill myself every day of the week.
Well, in that case, you probably deserve it.
Probably.
Yeah. Man, I've known you for years, and I gotta say, it's about right.
I still love you, Grath.
Apothne, any words for the goons on the panel?
So we've got, do we mean goons or do we mean Imperium here?
Well,
or ex-Imperium, as the case is for like half of them.
What's the difference?
I guess goons proper, and then how you think that the ex-Imperium guys will wind up working with them. I imagine things will be tense with the judge for a while.
From what I've heard, because like a bunch of the guys on the CSM are my friends, and I spoke to a lot of them like whilst I was running as well, and we were kind of talking about what we do together, who got on. So like I've heard that the judge, for some people surprisingly, is doing a really good job. He's being really useful in the discussions, bringing up a lot of good points, being really active. Aerith is yet to turn up to any meetings, and he's been sending messages in through Zenuria. Originally, I thought, oh my god, the guy that was originally really hostile to CCP is kind of like just boycotting it and bad things are happening. But it turns out that where he lives, they had like a massive, horrific hailstorm, and it's just like been a catastrophe basically where he lives right now. So, Aerith, whatever we're supposed to be enemies in game, I hope your real life shit is all okay and you get back to it, and you know, hopefully he'll be a great member of the CSM. Zenuria, who I first met this year at FanFest, who's a perfectly pleasant guy to talk to, my concern with him getting on is either there would be too much Spurg or that he just wouldn't know much about the game, but from what I told, he's taking part in discussions, he's being really active, he's bringing up good points, not necessarily on game design and mechanics, but on kind of just good other points that you can make, I guess, that he's really active.
The greatest troll ever would be if Zenuria gets elected and actually does a good job.
Well, from what I've heard so far, Zenuria is one of the more active, more useful, great, like, one of the better guys on there. Who else is there to talk about? Innominate? Is he,
Yeah.
I haven't heard much about him from the inside. I can't really say either good or bad. He might be doing amazingly. He might not be doing anything. I can't say either way at this point. But from what I've heard from the inside from some people on the council, is that so far, everything is really positive. There's a lot of cool discussions going on. A lot of stuff being brought back. CCP have been really welcoming. They've already like gotten really involved with people. They're already seeing things they've brought up affecting what CCP are doing and changing, and by the looks of it, it feels like a really good fresh start for CSM-CCP relations after the previous CSMs, and we'll leave it at that. And I think a big part of what helps that is there's a lot of fresh blood on the CSM. Like, it's, what, two incumbent members, and the rest of them are all brand new, and the two incumbents are Steve, who is just a lovely, lovely guy, and Gorski Carr as well, who kind of sometimes get involved in the political stuff. Like, a lot of people don't like him, but he's not actually an asshole. It's just he has a very interesting sense of humor. Like, he really enjoys trolley stuff. Like, he's a lovely guy. He really knows his stuff. And like, Gorski can be like messing around with you and trolling, but like, when it's time to get down to business to defeat the Huns or to do like CSM stuff, like, he is kind of Suetonia levels of really well laid out, really well thought out points and arguments and bringing stuff to the table. So I have really high hopes for this CSM.
Awesome. That's a good close on that story. I'm very glad to hear that the CSM's off to a good start. Probably in a bit we're going to have actual CSM members on the show, anyone that'll want to come on, but I want to give them some time to get
apart
settled
the
before
faux
we drag
CSM
them out.
Member you have.
Huh?
Apart
oh
from
yeah
the
yeah.
Faux CSM member.
You're a CSM member in my heart, Apothne.
So, audience, normally we would have like a contract update or a Noir Mercenary Coalition update, but since that doesn't really apply, I would love to hear from you guys, either on Twitter or email or whatever, what you would like to see instead is like a regular segment that we do. And of course, the masterclass will still come back when we have requests or something new is happening in the meta and we want to talk fits. But for right now, I think we're going to try host highlights. Basically, the hosts' Eve highlight for their own personal flying for the past week or two. So for myself, I'll lead things off. I flew with my NC Dot Broskis last night and caught an extremely, extremely cheeky son-of-a-bitch Goon Dominix in Saarinen. It was me and like three or four other guys, one battleship, one tornado, me and an Inti, a dude and an Orthrus, and I think another guy was in an Inti as well, or something to that effect. This Dominix is undocking. And he'll fight with the Typhoon that we had. And they'll brawl, and then he'll either like tank it and dock up, or eventually what he started to do was micro jump off and then warp away. And he did this three or four times, and just goes to show you, never set a pattern you don't intend on breaking. Because I flew out to his spot. And then someone warped to me and bookmarked it. And then we all warped back. We tried to micro jump him off with a command destroyer. And when he saw the command destroyer, he flipped out and panic micro jumped away. I chased after him with my crow. Got within 45-ish. I was almost ready to point him. And then he warped off in panic to his spot, which we had bookmarked. The Orthrus landed about 7 km off him, pointed him, the whole fleet came in to kill him. It was brilliant. It was the culmination of maybe an hour's work. And might not be a huge fuck-off fleet fight where you're killing tens of billions of Isk, but kills like that where you really work for it and set it up and it finally comes through, definitely some of the most satisfying in the game for me personally. So that's a huge highlight. And a shout out to Spotless Blade and Myth from the fleet last night. Apparently Spotless Blade, who used to be in Ushrakan back when we were in Providence with them, he's now an NC Dot as a skirmish FC. So I look forward to flying with him more. Ed?
My highlight was a couple of days ago, second time FCing a small fleet. We caught two ships, but also lost two ships, but in all was ISK positive, and it was a very good experience.
What was your doctrine?
Destroyers and smaller kitchen sinking.
Cool, congrats.
Yeah, thank you.
Pathni.
So I wrote an article for CZ about a sacrilege fit that I really like. I bought two of them. Took them out and immediately got blobbed to death by like real cancer gangs, like Pilgrim Rapier cloaked off the guy I was trying to engage with, like a Falcon coming in with jams, and just like all the things that a solo PvP hates all at once, like within three jumps of undocking both times from different gangs as well. And I then also just flew some T1 Merlins and had a really good time and just actually got some kills and stuff. Maybe I should stick to the T1 frigs. But yeah, I've just been really enjoying solo PvP lately and logging in my brand new Titan to look at how pretty it is.
Literal cancer fleets. Nit?
What are we doing? What's the segment?
Your highlight from the past 2 weeks. What's the best thing you did in EVE? The coolest.
Strangely enough, I've been having a lot of fun managing the standing fleet in Horde and just sort of keeping them from killing each other, quite literally in some cases, and killing any bad guys that come around, including Goons and Bastion and other Imperium people and White Legion.
White Legion?
White Legion.
Shoutouts to Taram Kaldar.
Well, he doesn't come so much.
All right, and like I said, audience, I'd love to hear your ideas for what could go in this spot, or if you liked host highlights and you want me to bring that back. So let me know. That's it, guys. Go to declarationsofwar.com to participate in the show poll and leave a comment. And as always, good hunting, listeners.
How the fuck? Get the fuck off the sheet, you fucking idiot. He's pissed, too. He's fucking beaking at me. I'm just gonna fucking shoot him. Nah. Sit the fuck down, bird. Oh, Jesus. He's on my computer now. Oh, he's on my fucking computer. If he shits on my computer, then I'll lose my fucking mind. Thanks for the moral support here, team. Just staring the fucking crow in the eye as he shits on my computer. This is literally bullshit. It's a goon spy. I was doing shit with cats and he fucking through the window. I knew it.
It'd be a bumblebee then, right?
No, it's not a fucking crow.
This is actually... Oh my god.
Real life sword, please.
He's fucking just like... I wish you could see. His wings are just spread out. And his fucking beak's just open and just fucking looking at me. Like, hey, bitch, I'm gonna fucking poke the shit out of you again. I've got a gun, so if he comes close to me, I'll pop it. I don't want to shoot a gun in a house. That sounds retarded.
That's because it is retarded.
Well, I'm not about to pop a 9mm at a crow. Like, that's just dumb. There are better things to shoot at.
Oh, if he shits on my computer, he's mad.
He already shit on my floor twice.
I don't know if I...
Anybody got a tennis racket I can borrow? Alright. He's kind of chilling. But I don't want to grab him. Well, I do want to grab him, but I don't want to get fucking pecked anymore. Motherfucker hurts. He's like, okay, it's hard to describe. He's off my computer. He's on my fucking blinds now. And his, like, feet are on the blinds, and he's using his feet to, like, hold himself up. And he's just pecking my blinds with nothing else to do in his life.
Okay, so, have you gotten, like, a sheet, like a bed sheet yet?
But, yeah, no, I'm holding a sun towel.
A sun towel? No, we need, like, a sheet, like, something that cannot escape.
All right, let me go get a sheet. I'll be right back.
Yes, get a sheet, like, something you can put on a bed.
All right, I'm going to do it. Hold on. All right, I've got a sheet.
Okay, so, just like a gladiator, you're going to be throwing the sheet over.
No, gladiator, he's gonna, you already fucking
pretend it's a fucking net.
I have rabies now.
Yes,
like
you're going net? To die.
I'm
yeah,
grabbing.
Like, pretend it's a fucking net. No, don't fucking grab him, because then you're definitely gonna get whatever disease it has.
Wait, you want me to throw the sheet at the window? He's behind my computer. Like, he's behind my desktop. There's a fucking
I'll stop
shield
being bad.
Oh, he's fine! Fuck you! No! Oh! Just fucking came at me!
Yes, yes, oh. Now, when he comes at you again, you need to bait him out, okay?
Hit him.
This is like any other bait off, okay? You're the bait.
Where the fuck did he go? I lost him. I lost the goddamn bird again. Where the fuck does he keep going?
This is stupid.
Oh, Jesus! Oh, God, he flew outside. Oh.
No, he shut the fucking doors.
He came through the fucking headshot. He flew right through my goddamn head. Oh, fuck that bird. Alright.
BRB. Fucking
just,
black hands. It's
I
a fucking crow,
I just
too.
Shat myself. That was brutal.
Oh my god.
Yo, fuck that. Oh, never again. That was so fucking funny. Oh, goddamn. Oh, I'm bleeding on my hand because of him. Jesus Christ.